How about them Colts? I love myself a good Colt, huh?
45?
40 what?
Colt 45.
I was thinking Indianapolis Colts.
Well, I initially thought that, and then I went to funny.
Right.
All right. At least I tried.
How about them Colts? I got it. Okay, I got it. How about them Colts?
Yeah. Anna, have you already listened to that the Colts podcast?
No. I have. That's why I'm coming from this at a.
You did? No, you listened to it.
Is that the that's oh Colt?
Yes.
How about them Colts?
It's how nice
been,
of us.
It's been a long day for me as well. It's been a long month, and we're only on August 11th.
Or 10th.
Exactly.
You thought you were experiencing the heartburn, but instead you were experiencing the reflux. Talking about what comes up. You may have thought you were listening to The Heartburn. You're actually listening to The Reflux. It's our commentary on whatever comes up from the most recent episode of The Heartburn. Before we dive in, I want to remind you there is a wonderful contest going where if you will review The Heartburn, any amount of stars, as long as you just enter some stars and say something at the Apple Podcast, I will go through and randomly pull some of those reviews and award one item of merchandise for The Heartburn or one item from the Doug Thy Neighbor t-shirt shop on Etsy. So any item from either The Heartburn or Doug Thy Neighbor on Etsy. And all you got to do is write us a review. Today, I am graced with two most excellent co-hosts. There is my sweetest and most favorite sister-in-law, Mrs. Kirsten Harrison, who is also a spiritual director. And then to my right is another experienced design artist and dear friend of mine, Mrs. Anna Brech, the international indignitary. And both of them will be having some fun and will be goofing off a little bit about a very serious issue, which is the issue of cults and how someone gets involved with them. Listen in as we chit-chat about the episode. Darren finds himself in a cult.
Oh my gosh, that was the edge of my seat at the end of it. I had chills. But yeah, no, there's so many, well, not so many.
Yes.
But a few visual moments for me listening to the podcast. It was weird to be in a place that I'd never actually been in my life. Like physically, I'm doing the dishes, listening to the podcast, right? Or at least cleaning. I never actually got to the dishes. Doesn't matter. But I was at that place, and I was like, I imagined what the chapel looked like, because he kept bringing up, well, in chapel they tell you 1,000 times, you know, to listen to God, and so it's not so, you know, outrageous what this guy was telling me to do. But he would say chapel, and I would see a chapel. This won't be a spoiler alert, but at one point he's in a hallway, and I totally imagined that hallway scene on the phone. I mean, to me,
yes,
that was like...
You didn't hear that part.
And I won't say anymore.
We won't spoil the very, very end, because it is definitely worth listening to, but there is a point where he's in a hallway, and for you that's a visual?
Yes, and it was like being in an accident. It was slow motion.
Ooh.
As the story was unfolding in that section of it, that slowed down to the strangest crawl to me. And really? Every detail of that hallway was I was picking up. Sounds I thought I could imagine. The carpet being this, you know, kind of low pile brown carpet. I mean, like everything was in, started to become into this weird minute focus.
And this, again, I won't say too much, but this is when he's talking to his brother.
Yes. Yeah. And chills.
Yeah.
I get el chilitos.
Yeah. Like I was saying, there's like, you kind of, at any point when you're listening up to this point, you can say, this guru guy is just a well-intended guy that maybe has a mental illness at the end or whatever. But then you hear this and you go, oh, you're a horrible human. You're a terrible, horrible human.
It's Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to learn more about how that worked for him, too. I think there's an analogy between our president and this, this cold information.
Yes.
I think there's so many analogies that it could be drawn, and I think it's important for people to, like, take a minute to see how simple it is to be drawn in by rhetoric and language and stuff you think, these little catchphrases that seem to make so much sense to people. And it's like, this is a really interesting time to be learning about this and having this podcast, you know?
Totally. Well, and part of what I want, from the beginning, I want to say to people, like, empathize. Don't sit around and say, like, oh, this could never be me. And I can't even tell you how many people I've talked to since then, and I've said that, and they would go, yeah, but it would never be me. And I go, no, like, the whole point is, here's a guy who is not just a double major, and he's clearly a very articulate human being, mm-hmm. but he is a Spanish major and a philosophy major. So the things we know about foreign languages is that tends to really foster critical thinking in other people, because you have to move out of your whole culture and be able to, like, see a distance from your own culture to really be able to speak a different language well. And then somebody who's taught to think, and it's still, it's how it piece by piece came together, some by deception, some by the culture that he came from. Part of the reason I take time to talk about just evangelicals a little bit is because that was the culture that the way it was emphasizing things led him to be susceptible to stuff.
Well, so, one of the things I thought about was his, he had mentioned a couple of times, just, you know, he saw me as a gentle person.
Yeah.
And that need to have someone know who you are, like, and how vital it is for all of us to have people we trust that can give us that information about ourselves, so we don't find ourselves in these weird situations where it's like, oh, you know, this person believes in me. And at that point, they kind of have you by the cojones, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's moments like that that I was, like, really interested in hearing his story.
Yeah.
I can't wait to hear the rest of it. Because I was just amazed. Yeah.
And to actually sit through the whole thing is not easy. Because it's just a lot of stuff.
Right.
You're nodding your head like crazy.
Right, I don't want to interrupt, but I do think it's so important what you said about entering into this with empathy versus analyzing or criticizing. Or I just found myself thinking about myself and looking at who's surrounding me and thinking about what voices am I listening to. I thought about my kids, like, how do I teach them to be discerning and aware of who's around them? What voices are they listening to? And then I also want to go to that place of community. How do we have checks and balances in our life? And I know I'm getting too far, but I know a huge part of this podcast is about assumption, staying away from assumptions. We want our assumptions to actually be curiosity. So it's not about, oh, well, he must be this type of person. It's like, I wonder how I might be vulnerable in that thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the problem, is that, I missed the very last you said, I wonder how we might be vulnerable, how we might. Yeah. The thing about life is that it doesn't happen in clear blocks, in clear squares. It happens in shades of gray. It's not a chessboard. And you don't move from step to step to step. Am I a Nazi? Am I not a Nazi? Because the answer is no. If somebody comes up and says, Doug, would you please be a Nazi today? It's an easy answer. Well, I mean, less and less in America with the rise of that for some people. But how you get there is a complex journey. And that means that even if I don't get there, it's where I fall on that spectrum along the way that has me concerned. So how of us are 40% cult-like in some of the hero worship that we engage in? How much of us totally buy what the politician says or what our favorite sports person says, or we really do care? Most of our ethical decisions are determined by what we see the Kardashians say. these are all variations on the same problems and temptations. And then you get to a certain point where there's what he calls the event horizon, and you just, it's hard to turn back. Like, how do you really walk away from your consumerist lifestyle? How do you walk away from things?
Sure.
Oh, we're too far in. So we all have to be critical of things and listen to, it's how the stuff happens. And what's interesting also is that he will be the first guest that I have of potentially six people in my life that have been part of cults. So it's not as if cults are far and away distant things. Plus, they're on the rise again. Mm-hmm. So Teal Swan in Costa Rica is making a big splash. There was the Nexium cult that there's just kind of losing its steam, and they've had criminal charges in Toronto, and there's a couple podcasts against them. There's a few of them still very active. So something's feeding it.
Yeah, and you had mentioned, you know, your community around you, and I just immediately thought about his community in that beautiful Spanish church that he attended and how he could never attend again, and he kind of held him away from that. Those moments, like that kind of stuff, to me is like, you know, like flashing red lights of this is when you should be concerned. Right. If you can't just go to the places that you feel the most loved or you know, inspired or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, there's an aspect of people try to isolate you. We're so much more vulnerable when we're in isolation.
Well, I mean, I was asked to join a cult, and I did, but I accidentally did it. Do you know about this?
We'll be right back. I have good news, everybody. I'm actually going to be giving away a t-shirt, a tote bag, a mug, actually an item of your choice, anywhere from the Heartburn Podcast Collection or from Doug Thy Neighbor, the store on Etsy, where you can go to just at etsy.com/shop/Doug Thy Neighbor. All you have to review, any review that you give, just put in a little bit of information, click a star, and I'm going to be choosing one randomly selected, not based on your review, randomly selected review each week through August and into September, and you'll receive one item, again, either from the Heartburn Podcast Collection or from the Doug Thy Neighbor store. So don't forget to review. That's all you got to do. And then I will click on it and be in touch with you, and we will send those off to the winners, but you have to review to do it.
Were you straight out asked? Somebody asked you.
This is a total, like, bomb you're just dropping. By the way, I did join a cult. Wait a minute. Hold on.
It's not.
I'm sorry. Let me reintroduce. So our other expert, our panel today. Go ahead. No, please. Don't let me stop you now.
It was a... So I'm not sure exactly what level, if that is a cult. We're still unsure. It was my sister's thing. And I was like going to prove to my family, like, look, you know, let's just support Bridget. So I went to their yoga retreat thing.
Yoga or gold?
It was, I don't know. The nuns and the priests all wear orange. And the reason she left it is because the yogis got hostile in Guatemala or something like that, which is funny to me because it's just yogis are so cool.
Yeah.
And they got really hostile with guns, and she was like, that's it. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's a really good joke. I mean,
that sounds like a really good place to draw the line.
And I still wasn't sure because I was like, oh, she's fine. Anyway, it's, I don't know, but it seemed real cultish.
How so? What was it? What were the clues for you?
Well, the clues were, she gave them money. It was like a community. It was so different than ism. You know, I was at home living with my parents, or just moved to Austin or something like that. It was pretty young. And it was just, we never really saw her anymore. And it just seemed really separated.
Were they pulling her away from your just keeping her busy and away from your family?
Yeah.
Then?
Yeah.
And so you joined News to Me.
Well, it was like, okay, so, you know, my normal diet and routine was like beer and pizza. And you know what I mean? Yeah. And then, like, you know, I would wait tables and I was, you know, it was early Austin life.
Right.
So they had me there for, I don't know, it was on a Sunday and it was like several hours of like doing chants and I was hungover and I was like really, like, really tired and like, oh my God, it was all so much, you know? And so they were like, would you like to do the promise ceremony? And I was like, all right, you know, like I was just rolling with it because I was just trying to support Bridget. Yeah. Anyway, they took me upstairs to this octagonal room and I sat there and I promised never to divulge what they asked me. So I can't tell you exactly what they asked me, but it was like really genuine, like easy questions, like general questions. Like basically, you know, would you be a good person? I'd be like, yeah, you know, would you do this?
Again, as opposed to,
you know, and I was like, yeah.
Like, no, right. No, what? I have a few bad things I have planned
so
for the afternoon.
It was just like, I just thought I was having this like nice conversation with this lovely nun, you know, anyway, I came downstairs and they all were like, yay. And I was like, oh, I just joined the group. Oh, no.
Oh, so wait, so how did you...
And so I was like, oh, this is good. This is big bad. It's gonna be bad when I gotta bring it to him. So it wasn't, I was only in a cult for like 8 hours.
So what made you then, was it just that was too much?
It was the reaction of them, and I realized, oh, I wasn't just answering like general, like, questions. I was being
taking
inducted.
These weren't questions. These were O's.
These were O's. Like in a, and I'm just the way I roll. It was like, yeah, okay. You know, there was one. I was like, we can do that. But I was really, really hungry and hungover, and they were gonna feed me after this, and so I just kind of was like, all right, yeah, okay, sounds good. I'll do that. You know, like kind of like the. You know, like, you don't know stealing, no lying to your parents. You know, every once in a while it happens.
Swear
in my life.
Blood oath to
right?
us to never leave us.
I stole a Snickers once. It was bad. I just had to see how it felt. But, you know.
Oh, so many things to say to that. I think about, you know, that is a legit tactic. I think of cults is to, like, make people really tired. Or not, you know, keep them from eating, put them in positions where they're more vulnerable and, you know, kind of like, all right, if you're going to take care of me, like,
but
that's what I
just
need.
Think about the impropriety of like asking homeless people to sit through a religious service, which I've done this before and I've been part of churches that do it. But to ask them that they have to sit through a religious service before you feed them is on a varying degree. Now, this, again, I'm not going to allow anybody to be just a sitting duck. I'm not going to allow religion to be a sitting duck or a whipping post for all of this in general, because it's all of us with different things at different times. So there's some other ways that we withhold or we reward people for complying in our worlds. So part of my question is not just what ways are we susceptible to cults, but in what way do we try to control other people and use some of the same tactics? That's part of it for me. And then I even think about, this will only fly for people who know what I'm talking about, but Kirsty and I had a friendship with someone who we'll call Juan Derecho.
Oh, yes, I know who exactly.
Okay, so we had a friendship with Juan Derecho, who kind of built a little empire unto himself, and it turned out later that he abused his power, but in the meantime, he also was doing an actual lot of good. And it was also in an academic role. That's the most that I can say. But so in his academic role, he was a great teacher. He taught a lot of really good theology. And then he just had these places where, yeah, the personality was a little much. And maybe it was a little too much here and there. And then I reached a point where I was like, oh, okay, nope. And we are not being honest anymore or there's something. So I departed. But the community kind of continued, But they weren't all go ahead in the wrong direction. In fact, when things actually finally did blow up, a lot of his community stood up and said, this is why we have to say no to you. This is why we have to say yes to other places, is because you taught us well. So, again, there's varying degrees of this kind of, of how this abuse plays out.
I do think it is a spectrum. I can look back and different things that I've been involved with and go, yeah, that, you know, anything that, that tries to pull you away and claim your allegiance and push away from your family or other things, I think has potential to do that. Just to go back, you were mentioning that you could picture the chapel, Anna, when you were listening to the story. I remember sitting in those 3 times a week college chapels, and I remember those messages of give your life to something bigger. And that is a message that our kids are getting, that it's just always about be a part of something bigger than yourself. And so that's something, you know, we might talk about as
No, I'm really concerned about this, is that for me, it was not just that it was, because I do want kids to be part of something bigger than themselves. I think what was so, to me, tragic about the chapels that he was going to that I relate to, he's closer in age to Kirstie, to your age, but a little bit younger, but not far off from our age in general. So we remember these chapels, going to them 3 times a week. And Kirstie and I, in part, became close friends because of a really motivational chapel that she went to, we both went to, but it was influential on you, telling you to do something amazing and gigantic with your life. To me, that's where it gets a little bit, frankly, unchristian. And this is something that I find that is more true of the evangelical branch of Christianities than the higher church or the mainline or the Anabaptist sections. So you'd go to these evangelistic, because evangelism is such a big thing. So it's all about eternity. And that was part of his things, like, is this what you should be doing? Right. Does this matter for eternity? And those are my echo effects. I don't know if you can tell. Very, very keenly executed.
Yes.
But I remember I was one of those people. I'm an Enneagram 4. So is Anna. Have to feel special. So I was like, I'm on board. I'm going to be special and please God forever. So that was what I was down for. And then as I've grown and become a Benedictine, that the lesson has been ora et labora. It's work and pray. The lesson of Brother Lawrence in the practice of the presence of God is, when I pick up a piece of straw, I'm picking it up with God. When I do dishes, I'm doing it with God. So all of these things, like the real, the long-standing Christian tradition for mystics, as much as any lay person, and I love medieval Christianity for this mostly, above all, everything is eternal. Character matters. How you treat a stranger matters. How you do the dishes matters. Not in a way that it's eternal in the sense like of heaven or hell. It's just that it all matters. And so does saving someone from dying from a river. So does sharing important information and loving people at particular moments. But the small is as big as the big, and you have to do all of it, not just some of it. And work is really, really important. Daily labor, especially. And so much of the longer standing, like, spiritual traditions have you weaving and working in small or doing some artisan labor. Mm-hmm. That's why we have beer and cheese, is because monks did work.
Well, that's how I felt working at Thundercloud. It was this daily,
yes,
the same thing I did every single day,
which was
this
recent
daily routine, and interacting with the community around me, because everybody around there walked to get their sandwiches. The whole community was surrounded by this sandwich shop, and it was so important for me to kind of start there again. You know, I had postpartum depression, all the stuff, and I was like, the only thing I can do, I think, right now is make sandwiches. And it did, this daily routine helped me build up my confidence, helped me build up the everything about it was spiritual to me. And I remember, you know, Robert, my brother, just ran into Chandler, who I worked with. He and I did not get along at the beginning at all. Ended up really loving one another. And he was like, why do you treat this so importantly? It's just sandwiches. And then they changed it to, it's just sandwiches. And then, you know, they kept changing it. Anyway, it was awesome. Fun, amazing spiritual journey at the sandwich shop. But I was like, it's that important to me to make everything the best I can right now, to get this rhythm where it's as close to God as I can be. And I just started the Artist's Way again. And one of the things that I'm reminded that if two or more are gathered in my name, I'm there, right? She's like, align yourself, your creative self, with the creator, and then you've got two or more people. Then you're in with God right then and there. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty nifty idea to send to my son, who I'm like, you know, he's an individual. He's not really a joiner. He's just, you know, like, well, who knows what he's going to be? He's going to be many, many different things. I don't want to call him out.
But he's a bit of a maverick, yeah.
Bit of a maverick, but he's also really good at knowing who he connects with. I've never seen anything like it. He knows immediately who the good people are, who his buddies are. He knows. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm less terrified for him knowing that that's his kind of initial gift that he has. And, you know, could he lose it? Absolutely. Could it get unhoned? Totally. You know? I mean, life is long, you know?
It's so much of it is about how you go to school with other people. It's about how you treat people on the playground. And that's not what this guru was saying to Darren. This guru was saying, you have to travel to my people, which is in, I can say, we agreed I could say Southeast Asia, and go there to evangelize people, because that matters. But if you're a banker, that doesn't matter. And if there's anything I would want to say to your son is, hang up your coat. Because that takes up other people's space when you don't, and that matters. Like, love in the small ways is so, so important. Kirstie, this is, we also are talking kind of as Enneagram 4s here, but you are a 2. We always default into Enneagram world a little bit. How is that different for you? And how is this different for you in college or when you were younger? Or is every college student a little bit?
Yeah, I think so many things. Just to add, I think Mother Teresa said, you know, do small things with great love. When we look back at just at the very great lovers of humanity, it tends to be a consistent message about small and ordinary things are where the magic is. You know, it's not in the flash, and you know, so I think as a 2, let me think. I think there's an intuition about helping people, maybe about how I can support people, what people need. And I tend to prefer to be in the background, frankly, than to be in front. I don't consider myself super charismatic. I could be more on the susceptible end, you know, of something like this, because 2s tend to look for their value from other people and need external validation if we're not doing the work, if we're not properly aligned, if I'm not connected to where my love comes from. And this is my story. I'm in no way trying to put this on anybody else. That, you know, I like to hang out with people that tell me how great I am. So, I mean, don't we all, right? And I think there's a part where he says, I'm just looking at my notebook here. There's a part where he said, no, there's only one thing that I wrote down because it just felt so important to me. There was a benevolence that up to that point in his experience had always been associated with being able to see into someone's soul. This person could look at him and know in a way what others didn't about him. And there was a sense of trust that people would do that in good faith. And I mean, I think, honestly, Doug, you are a person that is... What? No, you are a person that is gifted into seeing into people's souls. And so...
Well, I'll tell you what I was just about to say is, and I was going to say it starting in a humorous way, is real talk, people. Real talk. Real talk. It's time for some real talk. I would be a great cult leader.
Seriously.
And I say this, I say this totally jokingly. Okay, let's have a little fun first. Because one, matching uniforms.
Oh my God.
Super into it. We could all wear robes.
God. That would be awesome.
My colors. Because nobody ever wears my colors, and I would make them really pretty robes. They would be like hot pink. And like ocean colors, and then like during summer. Oh, we would go with seasons.
Yes, oh, the fall would be.
And people would have choices so they could look good. And then, see, I've already thought this too.
And then maybe not everybody would wear the same colors. There would be complementary colors.
Would have to be complementary within each season.
But in all seriosity, I mean, yes, I realize. In all seriosity, what's really funny is that my mom, when we were kids, one of the things that she would pray for me is that I wouldn't join a cult. She was really, really terrified of me joining a cult. Mm-hmm. And I was like, now I'm like, what if I started one? I'm like, I do have those personality traits, and I kept thinking about that. And also, Darren talked about love bombing, which totally cracked me up, because love bombing is actually a thing that burners do that is separate. Love bombing is a word that Stephen Hassan came up with to talk about how they'll inundate you with love and make you feel great, and then they will shift gears and make you feel tired and overworked and other things. And then love bombing is also an art thing to do, and love bombing is like, we make a point to always appreciate people at the end of every episode. So it's really, really important because of how it impacts people. The trick is, one, not to turn on people after you do that, to maintain that place of appreciation, and to leave them in a place of power, not to take power because you appreciate them. That's where it's really different. But in all truth, yes, I have a lot of the gifts that cult leaders have. And to me, that's all the more reason for me to work hard to use my gifts and not to leverage power. So not to be the person who's right, not to be the person who gathers a community, not to turn my community against other people, but to really maintain like a place of balance and nonviolence and non-control. So even as I take leadership positions in other communities, to always pass the power down, because if we're talking about spectrum, could I become a cult leader? Absolutely. Without question. Mm-hmm. I think it would be very easy to imagine in an extreme way if I started at a different point in my life. I need to get an earlier start if I'm going to be a cult leader. I need to run up on it in my 20s. But if I'm way too tired now to run a cult. But in all seriousness, like that for me to have people that tell me only what I want to hear and that comply with my vision of the world is a thing that's probably easier for me than it is for other people. And that's not a good idea. And it's not what I really want.
I've got so many things.
So many things. Say them all. So,
not really, but I have a couple. Yeah, no, I probably have a lot. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
Two things. Nope. One thing.
So you had sent three of the little mini episodes,
yes,
right?
Yes, right.
And then I was like, okay. You know, like, cliffhanger on the third one, isn't it? Right?
A little bit, yeah.
And so I was like, oh, my God. And then he sent me... Doug, you sent me the link in a different way. Like, the other ones were on my Gmail, and this one was in my messages. And I clicked it, and it was like, no content. And I was like, is he trying to... is he trying to call me out? Is he trying to make me a cult for the Heartburn?
If you want the fourth... That's me saying earlier. I'm like, if you want another episode...
You better
share,
subscribe.
Subscribe. Let's review. Everybody, let's review together. Let's hold hands and review. Put on your t-shirts that I'm selling on Etsy at Doug Thy Neighbor. I'm not kidding at all. Buy your t-shirts and then we'll sit in a circle and all review together.
Oh, let's
review
together. Oh my God, you should sell phone books. Did I go too far?
No. I think Darren would laugh at that. Let's all read through the phone book.
As a matter of fact, I'll sell them on my.
Well, what's a point number one? What's a phone book? I don't know if you heard, but he's like, I was on a landline, and I'm like, we'll include a link.
To what a landline. I know you guys don't know what a landline is.
And then a phone book. What's a phone book? So many questions still to ask just about how he and his brother have repaired their relationship over the years. Mm-hmm. Because you have to get out of awful situations, you have to have grace. Because by the time, I mean, that cults work like the mafia works. You do one thing and out of obligation, you do one more that's maybe dirties you a little bit. And then before you know it, you've hurt other people. And you have to either continue to play in that world, or to get out of that world and realize what you've done, you need forgiveness. Like, you have to have real grace to say, sure, I know you have harmed, and I know you have failed, and you have a place among us. And that doesn't mean for us to be unsafe or ill-boundaried. We have to look for the right people at the right time and blah, 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 blah. But offering grace to each other with wisdom in an artful way is how we deliver people from these really systems of death. And again, that goes on a spectrum too. So it's not that all my friends are on the verge of being in the mafia, but we do get on the verge of just being hurtful, like living, relying on violence. I think about my friends who are Christians, who are fearful and angry, and that's part of their shtick. Like, especially with politics right now, I'm like, I want you out of that life. It's not about me agreeing or disagreeing with your politics. I'm tired of you being angry and fearful. And I can't let you out unless I also forgive you.
Well, it seems like it's a false front of, like, protection and comfort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When you're in this fear and you have this, you know, you're protected in this thing that's shrouding you in some really bad stuff.
Yeah.
And it does seem safe and it does seem comfortable. He even mentioned that in the podcast. Like, if it feels too good to be true and you feel, you know, the warm fuzzies around you and that's nothing, you know, you better start questioning what's happening.
Yeah. And there's a place where it breaks with continuity of the world you've known up to that point. That means you're entering into a different world.
Right.
And if you're going to be in that world, it's going to be hard to break through and go back out.
Well, his black hole analogy really got me. It was like, whoa, I can really see that point where it's like, there's nothing else there. There's no webs of, like, there's no streets you can go on. You're down in the tunnel, and that's it. There's no other people to reach out. That was really a terrifying analogy.
It really is, yeah.
There were so many, like, scary things. It's so scary. Oh, my gosh. It was intense.
You know what was scary is last night I was listening to that, and then right after I finished listening to it, I got an email from Netflix recommending The Family on Netflix.
Oh, my gosh. I would have freaked out.
Like, this, you know, political conspiracy that's been going on for 80 years where, you know, Christians are running U.S. politics on both sides. I started watching it after that. It's like two episodes.
What? Oh, my gosh. No doubt.
I couldn't sleep last night.
Oh, my gosh. You just got, like, 3D culted.
That was serious.
Oh, my God. That's too much. Yeah, the only thing that saved me was, like, it was daytime. And, like, looking out the kitchen window, I was like, it's going to be okay. Doug will send you the fourth episode.
one day, yeah, the fourth episode is coming. All you need to do is subscribe and review and share, and I'll be with you.
And you won't wait patiently because you can't, because you'll be so.
So we talked a little bit about what can we do when we're in positions of power, not to control. I think about like one really influential person that I listen to. He, I think, intentionally like doesn't like run, you know, used to be a pastor, but doesn't run any kind of organization now. He speaks, but a lot of what he does is ask questions. And as spiritual directors, there's hopefully not a huge power dynamic, but there is a little bit of a power dynamic. And so I think it's really important to be asking people, what is God inviting you to do? What are you feeling drawn to in your life, rather than me having an agenda for your life?
There's a kind of irony to people. When I talk about being a spiritual director, one of the reasons why I'm much more comfortable being a spiritual director than a pastor is because I have so little control in comparison. Because I have to listen, and I have to ask questions, and I have to wonder what they're up to. And I'm not afraid to share my thoughts, especially once I know people and I know how seriously they do and don't tell me. But the best that I can possibly do is like, it's a bit like being a doctor, which is in a lot of ways is not very powerful. If they're a good doctor, you can be like, well, I can prescribe this or I can prescribe this, but if you don't walk and don't exercise, I mean, it's up to you, really. So I can be like, I can give you a nice prayer to pray, but if you don't go make things right with your brother or your mom because you're mad at him, then all the prayers in the world isn't going to fix you. And that's a nice place to be. It's a better place to make a difference than to be on television. Which goes back to another thing that we've kind of had over this season is there's a question of Christian visibility. And where are all the good Christians? And I think, well, they're not on camera because that's a shitty place for camera. I mean, I have to bleep all that out, but that's a shitty place for Christians to be, is that like when you follow Jesus, like working your way to a place where you have power is not the point. I'm not saying that there aren't any Christians that do have power. I think Jimmy Carter remains a pretty decent example of what a pretty good Christian in power was, and he wasn't a great president because of it.
I love Jimmy. He's my favorite.
But there's a lot of things that he didn't do right because he did them in Christian ways instead, and that's not good for government because Christian is pretty anti-empire. So the reason why Christians, I think, can stay invisible sometimes is because that's where they belong. I mean, Christians belong serving underneath. And when they do, like the Pope, who I do respect, get into a position of power, you're supposed to spend a lot of time pointing downward, like a good Saint Francis would do, like a good Jesuit would do, is to say, let's not talk about me. Let's talk about why we're not taking care of the poor. Let's look at that. There's plenty for us to do there. Well, I think we've covered. Any last thoughts? Either of you, before we...
I just think about myself and what questions do I need to make a part of my life? What questions do I need to be asking myself as I move through life? You know, related to politics, Anna, you brought up politics, and it's just such a polarizing time. And so what questions, you know, what was I listening to something recently where they said, we need to be asking ourselves, where have we gotten it wrong? If we've gotten it wrong in the past, where are we getting it wrong now? Have this, it can be a loving eye, but there's a level of a critical eye. And that I think is done best in community, but there's a thing of, I know that I've gotten it wrong in the past. I know that we've gotten it wrong in the past. I guess, how do I ask myself, what questions do I ask myself to not be controlling inappropriately or be controlled inappropriately? I'm not just blindly follow, which is my total natural tendency.
Conversation with Darren, and that I say at the end of the at our final of our next episode that we haven't even edited yet. I hope that he can one day hear what God heard when he was saying yes on the telephone. Because what God heard and what the guru heard were the same words, but they were different things. So he was manipulated in a way to say yes. And God heard a yes, and the guru heard a yes, and they both acted out of their own interests. But God was still there and still loved him. And so I think to anybody who's in, whether it's an abusive relationship or you're in a terrifying church that maybe isn't considered a cult, but like me, was telling you things that weren't safe and weren't healthy. One is you can get in touch with us and we will put you in touch with Out Youth. If you're gay and you're being beat up on a daily basis because of your church, get in touch with us and we'll put you in touch with someone that can help you be supportive. If you're in a place where you're being abused, we'll get you in touch with a safe place here in Austin and we'll get you in touch with shelters that can help you get out. There are people in the world that love you and do have that grace for you. So follow the actual love. Trust that God, however you can understand God, is still on your side. And look for someone in the community to work with you and follow your heart, your deepest heart, to be who you are, who God made you to be. That's the best advice that I think I can give. I don't think that Darren will give that to us, no. But those are the kind of the convictions of this podcast that is what led us to ask these questions in the first place. Anna?
Authenticity is my word of the week. I keep writing it. I keep thinking about it. And I really do believe that we have one responsibility in this life, and that is to be genuinely who we are. God will work through us. If we are genuinely who we are, you can bet your butt that he will make that happen for you. So, you know, that's the key, is we end up putting all these patches all over ourselves through our life and getting further and further from who we are sometimes. Sometimes not. I mean, I'm not, you know, this is not a one, you know, philosophy for everyone. I'm just saying that the more you can carve out the fear, get to this, like, incredibly bright beam of sunshine of who you are, that's where God is. That's where the messages are. That's where the inspiration is. That's where we go. Everything gets clear at that point.
Anna's words ring true, as the closest we stay to who God means for us to be, to our truest self, the more clarity we will have about where it is we really belong, to follow our gut instincts. Remember, if you are in need of any assistance and find yourself in a situation where you may need someone to walk with you, please be in touch with us at welcometotheheartburn@gmail.com, and we will put you in touch with someone in your area that can be of assistance to you. So that's us it for today. Please don't forget that we have an ongoing contest right now that if you review us at Apple Podcasts, that you'll be eligible to win some merchandise from the Heartburn Podcast, which would be a shirt, a mug, one of our really cool, badass pink tote bags, hot pink tote bags, or you can also get something from the Doug Thy Neighbor Shop at Etsy.com. Please also don't forget to share with us, and you can always email your questions for future episodes to DearUncleDoug@gmail.com. You've been listening to The Reflux. Special thanks to Anna Brech and to Kirsten Harrison for being co-hosts this week. My name is Doug Harrison. Join us for the next episode of The Heartburn, in which we'll be joined by Lori Iserloh, who has an amazing story to tell about changing the very course of the Episcopal Church in some really beautiful ways for the LGBTQ+ community. She's just an ordinary person, but what an exceptional human. This is Doug Harrison, and you've been listening to The Reflux.
I want to do that too. I want to get close to the mic and go.
It does make a difference for your voice.
Reflux.
One more time. One, two, three.
Reflux.
Oh, it's always going to be late on your end.
No. Well, she'll start it, and then we join in.
So I can move it over.
Oh, she's on a separate track.
You just make a... That's a meme we're totally going to just loop in for. Oh, she's on a separate track. Every time somebody says something different.
She's on a separate track.
Well, you guys, we're so close. You always know how to help me finish my...
Thank you for including
us. Sentences. Sandwiches.
I totally interrupted this.
Podcasts.
Oh, she's on a separate track.